Phone the comment line 1850 715 900.
Only 1 in 10 victims of sexual assault and abuse come forward to report their crime. The prospect of being cross-examined in a court case is a barrier enough for many victims, but under our legal system, there's the added disincentive of knowing that if their case is to go ahead, they'll be required to allow notes from counselling sessions they've had to be released to the accused. The disclosure of counselling notes in rape and abuse cases is a matter that several groups have attempted to tackle and one they hope will be addressed by the Minister Alan Chatter in a forthcoming sexual offences bill. I'm joined now in studio by barrister and lecturer in law at UCD, Paul Anthony McDermott, and by Ellen O'Malley Dunlop, Chief Executive of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. Thanks to you both for coming in. Paul Anthony McDermott, can I ask you first of all, just for the facts of the situation, what is the legal position about notes regarding counselling sessions?
Nobody actually knows what the law is because we're one of the few countries in the world not to have legislation dealing with this issue. What the courts have said is if somebody is on trial accused of sexual offence, they've got a right to get full disclosure of all material that could be relevant to any potential line of defence. One body of material that could be relevant to that are counselling notes, because if somebody has made a statement to the Gardaí, if they've also described what happened to a counsellor, obviously a person who is accused would like to see those statements to see, are they consistent? And what the courts have said is the DPP must hand over everything that's relevant. The problem is the DPP may not be able to get the notes from the counsellor. And a couple of times the issue has come before the Supreme Court and the issue has been resolved without a judgment because the notes have been handed over. So at the moment, the courts seem to take the position that there's no legal mechanism whereby such notes can be compelled, but on the other hand have suggested that you couldn't put somebody on trial if there was important information that they couldn't get. What nobody has done is join up those two principles and explain.
And when has this become an issue, or was it not previously the case, or people might have had the understanding and the expectation that the relationship between a victim and a counsellor would be similar to that between a client and a solicitor, maybe a patient and a doctor, but this seems to be different.
This has been a problem brewing in our law for a couple of decades now, and it's one of those areas where legislation is desperately needed in order to resolve how you balance the rights of the victim with the rights of the defence. And the risk is what will happen is a high-profile case will go wrong, and it's only then everybody will realise the gap in our law.
As of now, is the legal position one whereby if the notes are withheld by the victim, that the trial simply will collapse?
There is a risk that a trial judge, if they were satisfied that there's important information that could have assisted the defence and the DPP hasn't been able to get it, that the trial could be stopped.
Ellen O'Malley Dunlop, what is the position of the Rape Crisis Centre?
We had a policy whereby we would never hand over notes, and in certain cases where the victim gave their consent, the judge would subpoena the notes and they would be handed over at the last minute. And the victim or the client, our client, would be in a dreadful state not knowing whether or not the case was going to go ahead. And because of that, we decided to have a memorandum of understanding with the Office of the DPP, whereby if notes are to be handed over in a court situation, we and we are requested by the Office of the DPP, we meet the client. The client, with their therapist, looks over their notes and in that way is giving informed consent as to whether or not they will decide to hand them over.
So you'll only hand them over with the consent of the client?
Absolutely.
But do you have to tell the client as well that if the notes are not given over to the DPP, chances are there won't be any trial?
They will already be told that by the Office of the DPP.
Has that been stated to you by the DPP that if we don't have the notes, if you're not going to give us the notes, we simply cannot press ahead?
Well, we know that that's a fact that can happen. However, we have found that when clients want to hand over their notes and they might decide to say redact something that is not relevant, and that the Office of the DPP will redact that and will argue that on behalf of the client. But what we found is it actually has relieved the clients hugely. They're not waiting at the last minute to know whether or not this is going to happen. And they know what's going to be handed over. So
this protocol has
informed.
Changed from a previous situation whereby they could be asked for this material at the last minute before a trial or maybe even during a trial, whereas now it's dealt with well in advance.
Absolutely. But I agree with Paul Anthony, we need legislation. And I think it's really important in the new general scheme of the Criminal Law Sexual Offences Bill that there'll be procedures that will be very clearly stated as to when counselling notes are handed over. Now, we still would hold that we believe that they have no place within the criminal justice system because they're not about facts.
What about that point, Paul Anthony McDermott, that they shouldn't be in there at all?
Absolutely, and a lot of people would agree with that. And there'll always be a tension between the position of a complainant and the position of the accused. And I don't think that can ever be resolved. But what I can try to do is to explain it. If you're the victim of a crime, you obviously know what happened to you and you know what you're saying is true. But from the criminal justice point of view, it has to work from a very different starting position, which is that the accused is presumed innocent. And it's really that clash that causes all of the problems. Because, of course, the complainant will say, I know what I'm saying is true. Why does somebody need to dig into my counselling, to dig into my past? But the court has to say, we don't know it's true. The prosecution are going to have to prove it beyond all reasonable doubt. And if you think about it, if a member of your family were charged with a serious crime and the evidence was their word against somebody else's, one of the only other ways of trying to resolve what happened might be to look at previous statements made by the complainant. Because to take one example, and it would be a rare example, this doesn't happen often, but suppose somebody says they were abused by a person in authority, a teacher or whoever it might be, and it happened when they were very young. They might go to the Gardaí and identify one teacher as being the person who abused them 40 years ago. But if you got counselling notes, it's possible, although rare, that they might have named someone else. And that if you had access to that information from the defence point of view, you would then be able to say, well, look, is there an issue here? Does this person really remember? So that's unfortunately where the clash comes.
Well, I would say that in terms of when Paul Anthony is describing very clearly there what happens in the court situation, but what you're leaving out, Paul Anthony, is the fact that the victim doesn't have representation. The DPP is there for the state, not for the victim.
No, but so if there's a doubt that's identified in the counselling notes, surely that should be brought to the attention of the court.
Well, absolutely. I've no problem about that, but I do think, though, that you could have a situation, for example, in a counselling session where a therapist might write down, where a victim might say, you know, sometimes I don't know if this ever happened to me, because they need to explore that type of thing because it's so horrendous what has happened to them and they don't want to believe it has happened to them. And if the therapist writes that down and it's brought into the court situation, again, you know, a doubt is put.
From your experience, though, Ellen, on the cases so far, and particularly since you signed this protocol in 2012 with the DPP's office, what's the practical experience been? Have lawyers been exploiting notes of counselling sessions?
No, they haven't. And the information in the counselling notes have been very clear.
But I presume that the right of access is to the full notes. You don't just give them an edited version. You have to give them the originals.
Yes, absolutely.
But is there any sense or any fear that maybe the counselling is somehow diminished or restricted by virtue of the knowledge that both parties have that any notes taken down may have to be handed over ultimately to the lawyers for the person being accused of a rape or a sexual abuse?
Well, there's no way that a counsellor is going to write down anything that is not true. But it's that nuance in terms of what I just said about how a victim needs to explore other bits of themselves. It's not about, but what Paul Anthony is talking about is a fact. Like if somebody is named in a Garda statement and there's a different name in the counselling notes, that certainly is something that if it came out, it would be very important, because to be accused of a crime crime of this nature, you know, it is a very serious thing. And we for an accused person, but the victim's situation within the court situation is stacked against them, really. And it's really difficult.
But if you say that lawyers haven't been abusing the availability of these notes, what's the particular difficulty?
Well, the difficulty is it is so much better for a victim in a counselling or psychotherapy setting to know that that is absolutely confidential and that they can talk about whatever they need to talk about and know it's not going to go outside of that space.
How, Paul Anthony McDermott, might this matter be addressed in the forthcoming Sexual Offences Bill?
Well, certainly what they do in Canada is they try to recognise all of these problems by saying you have a pre-trial hearing before court, the court decides if the notes should be handed over, and at that hearing it would seem to me there's no reason why the complainant couldn't be legally represented, because I think the concern at the moment is all of this is being done at the behest of the defence and the DPP, and the actual complainant isn't getting a chance to be heard. So I don't see any difficulty with saying, let's have a pre-trial hearing. The complainant can be legally represented and should receive funding from the state so that they can have representation and should be able to argue why they think the notes shouldn't be handed over. But I think at all times the judge ultimately will have to ensure a fair trial. And maybe it's because of our history, but we're always very protective of the right to a fair trial. Our system is very much weighted towards making sure nobody who isn't guilty is convicted. And that's really the understanding behind our law in this area.
I would agree with Paul Anthony. The pre-trial, we would support that. In fact, we've made recommendations to the Minister Shatter, and he's very supportive of it as well, and I believe it will be included. We have already a situation where when a defence wants to cross-examine a victim about their past sexual history, then and only then can the complainant or the victim have separate legal representation, and we could have an extension of that, and we would certainly support that. Could I also say that it's terribly difficult to get a case of this nature to court, and we really owe a great debt to those victims who stay the course of the criminal justice system. We have a huge fallout. In fact, one of the highest in over 11 European countries between actual reporting and getting to court. And I really would urge anybody who is in the system to try as best they can to stay in it, because they're doing all of us a service. And anybody who is listening to us and needs support or help, there is a 24-hour national helpline, which is 1-800-77-88-88, and there's always a trained person at the end of that line.
So that's 1-800-77-88-88, and that's round-the-clock availability.
Exactly.
Right, we'll leave it there. Ellen O'Malley Dunlop, Chief Executive of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, and Paul Anthony McDermott, Barrister and Lecturer in Law at University College Dublin. Thank you both for being with us.